Ready. Serving the James Cook University Hospital, Middlesbrough, and beyond. This is Southside.
Now, given that there are always two sides to every story, it's very enough to actually point out that the phenomenon of alternative energy is constantly with us in one way, shape or form. And accordingly, the notion of wind farms to actually provide some of the energy packages have been put forward pretty much as a panacea. As always, this is not necessarily quite the case. So accordingly, we're actually taking the opportunity now to really just find out a little bit more about the challenges and the difficulties that are actually faced by people who have encountered wind farms, in fact, can be defined very much as wind farm protesters. And so we're lucky enough to be able to speak to one of the key sort of protesters in the wind farm. We're going to move to a different part of the country now, so moving away from Cumbria over to Lincolnshire, and we wish to speak now to hopefully another lady who's also suffering some of the challenges of the wind farm. Of course, that's Jane Davis. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Okay, now, Ron's major concern that seemed to come across from there in this whole area was that despite the fact that he's trying to get these issues raised in Parliament, his MP is a government whip and therefore can't really raise the issue, so he's kind of hidebound from that point of view. I mean, some of the descriptions of his experiences with respect to the wind farm, quite frankly, were horrendous. I mean, the notion of obviously the flashing lights, the constant sound of the turbine and so on, something which, again, I think most folk would probably think when they think of wind farms of something which are probably relaxing, perhaps useful, and again this whole notion of the hay wain and the whole notion of windmills in general. This, I gather, Jane, you're going to say is absolutely not the case at all.
That's correct. It isn't the case at all. And if it was, you wouldn't be talking to me.
We might, but over something completely different, etc.
Absolutely.
Okay, so talk to us and share with us your experiences in Lincolnshire, because that, again, it's a different part of the country. How are things opening up there?
Well, we've had to abandon our home. The wind turbine started operation in 2006, June 2006, and within 3 days we started having noise problems. We don't get flicker problems, as you heard Ron describe, because we're 930 metres away. That's about half a mile. But what we do get is unremitting noise. Some of the noise is audible noise, a very loud sort of whoom, whoom, whoom noise, and that occurs most often sort of late at night or in the early evening, or first thing in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and it stops you sleeping. It affects that sort of noise is at its worst when we're downwind of the prevailing wind. But what we also have all the time is a persistent low-frequency hum, sort of that actually penetrates through the fabric of the building, of the house, and makes the whole house kind of hum very quietly, which is most disconcerting when you're trying to sleep. In terms of what the effect it's had on us, as I said, we've now abandoned our home. And we've actually taken a case to the Valuation Tribunal where they felt that we'd proved that we had lost the amenity, the residential amenity that was our home, had been impaired by the proximity to the wind farm. So we've kind of done that, but we rent 5 miles away in order just to be able to sleep and live, because our home is actually the family farmhouse and we can no longer live there. I think what's also worrying is that we're starting to see some health problems. Now, it's very difficult. I think there isn't quite enough evidence yet out there to say definitely that some of the things that are happening to members of our family are definitely related to sound, but it looks increasingly likely that some of these things are. So my husband's recently been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, which is a fast erratic heartbeat, at the age of 44. And indeed, his heart, when it goes into this spasm, beats at exactly the same pulse as the turbines do. My father-in-law has got vertigo, hearing loss and tinnitus. And my mother-in-law has had several episodes of pneumonia requiring hospital admission. And we know that all these things are being investigated in America and Portugal in particular, and are felt to be something called wind turbine syndrome. Now, whether those things are a direct result of the sleep deprivation, in our case, we were getting 3 or 4 hours sleep a night over 5 or 6 weeks. And that's what caused us eventually to have to move out. I think the jury's still out on that. There isn't enough research being done. There isn't enough evidence. But it's absolutely appalling. We've also lost wildlife, and the moles, which probably some people say, oh, that's a really good thing, won't come within about 6 metres of the house any longer. And we think that's because the house acts like a sort of amplifier. But our swallows in the June 2006 deserted their nests with eggs in. And we've had about 30 pairs of breeding swallows on the farm since 1960. And we've got two pairs have just come back this year, 2009. But we haven't seen any swallows over the intervening 2.5 years.
I know it's possible we'll be coming down to do a little location report with you in the not-too-distant future to get an idea of the extent of the issue. But doubtless you've had folk, as you say, who are going through this whole process, investigating it. Again, you don't necessarily need to have a degree in physics or electronics to appreciate that if you're based with a house that's directly underneath an electricity pylon, it's not necessarily the best thing to actually lead to contentment and happiness and so on. Some of the aspects you've described there, Jane, quite frankly, are just horrific. And I think if at the very best, people would be just completely astounded at what is being touted as a solution to energy difficulties, etc., has clearly had this huge impact when, as indeed has been pointed out, within the States, these constructions are not allowed to be within 2 miles of residential bases. And clearly there are all other areas as happening. In terms of how the setup was built, was there a standard way in which people were sold the package? Did you actually say, yeah, that's okay, just put the wind farm over there, no problems whatsoever?
We weren't consulted.
So it literally just happened?
There was no consultation with any. We live on a very tiny road at the back of the wind farm, if you like, whereas the access to the wind farm is through the village, and we're sort of, I think what they call a rural fenland with isolated farmhouses, and we were never consulted. So we did read something about it, I think, once in the local paper, but we thought erroneously, of course, that if there had been any problem or was likely to be a problem, then somebody would have contacted us. Perhaps they would have come to see us or sent us a letter or done some background readings at our property, but none of those things happened.
Well, clearly, when you bear in mind the challenges that are often faced with local councils when they have to deal with things such as nightclubs being built, opened up, extensions being put together, and the nightmare of red tape that certainly applies within planning permission in general, I just find that quite astonishing that, you know, such a thing can actually happen where, you know, on the one hand, you know, you've got that level of bureaucracy, which is almost, you know, incredible, and then on the same line you have wind farms being put up, and they're not small structures, are they? I mean, we're not talking sort of mini windmills here, are
we? No, they're 100 metres. I think some of the other people you're planning to talk to have got turbines that are bigger than that. Ours are 100 metres tall from base to tip. I think when they were put up, there was, and there still is, a lack of understanding of the damage that sound waves can do to people. There's a lack of understanding of the characteristic of the noise that comes out of them. And there's a lack of understanding of the way that they interact with the environment around them. I don't think the understanding was there about different air currents at different heights. So those people who are balloonists or go up in gliders and aeroplanes will know exactly what I'm talking about. For the rest of us, good barbecue weather for us, where it's quiet and still at ground level, it's very, very noisy because you get jet streams operating at what they call hub height. So at ground level, you're getting your Barbie out, then all of a sudden you're and it is most disconcerting and quite worrying. I know you alluded to Ron having difficulties with his MP. Our MP's actually been very supportive. But what we have found as we've gone through all the processes that are available in the United Kingdom at the moment, going through environmental health, the local council, local government ombudsman and the parliamentary ombudsman, is that the guidance for measuring noise from wind turbines, which is different from any other, ETSU R97, is not actually designed to protect the residential amenity. So, you know, the parameter has to be the needs of the few have to be sacrificed for the greater good, which, if the turbines consistently produced electricity at a reasonable rate, it might be a little more difficult to stomach, although we would still have lost our home and possibly our health. But on average, they operated around 25% of their installed capacity, and then not consistently. So if you wanted to cook your Christmas dinner this year or stay warm in January when it was so bitterly cold and you were just reliant on wind energy, you'd have been very cold and very hungry, because our turbines produced very little electricity, and I think just over 25% in January, and that wasn't consistent, so that would be very difficult.
And you've certainly alluded to, again, a range of issues there in terms of the efficacy of the whole thing. Jane, there are doubtless sort of all sorts of other things I'm sure you could have been usefully getting on to. I mean, you didn't need this coming into your life in any way, shape or form. Do you see light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, you've said that your MP is at least supportive, so that's one thing that's coming together. Presumably the ideal solution would be for them to demolish and rebuild somewhere else.
We've met many people. There are 38 wind farms across the United Kingdom at the moment, the majority of them in England. They're causing similar problems as we're suffering, and indeed, as you've spoken to Ron, that is 20% of all currently operating wind farms are causing noise problems for local residents. So I'm afraid that the only solution appears to be some kind of court case in order to be able to sort of set a precedent, because those in power at the moment simply aren't listening to the fact of the destruction that's going on in the rural areas to people. And it also, on a bigger level, it actually splits communities. That what it's done in communities is outrageous. Mm. In fact, my husband and my father-in-law have just resigned as parish councillors, and my father-in-law's been a parish councillor for over 30 years, because there are other people in the village who are associated with the landowner who are trying to ridicule our position and that of other people who have got similar issues to us from being near to wind turbines. So it does split communities.
Again, taking that a couple of stages further forward, have you spoken to the companies responsible for the whole thing, and have they been sympathetic? I mean, we haven't had really the opportunity to provide a right of reply. Obviously, clearly that's in the process of working through. But I mean, have you connected with those companies, and have they given you any positive response, or have they also ignored you?
They've been down once to see us. And they came down on a nice sunny afternoon when there wasn't any wind, and sort of sat there and said, oh, you know, can't hear anything, which was hardly surprising because the turbines were sort of gently wafting in the breeze. They sort of vaguely offered us, well, what are you looking for? What are you looking for? Well, by that point, we'd realised that if we couldn't sleep, then it really doesn't matter how much money somebody gives you. If you can't sleep at home, you can't sleep there. And we now know that no amount of double glazing or trees or acoustic insulation is going to make any difference at all. So that sort of didn't go any further than that. They made it very clear that they weren't going to take them down. They've been promising to come back and do some more background measurements since October 2006, but they don't seem to have got here yet. And the last communication I had with them was in August 2007, when my daughter, unsurprisingly really, given the disruption to her life and sleep, did far worse in her AS levels than was predicted. And I was really upset about that. And I wrote to them and said, you know, it's not any devastated our lives, you've devastated my daughter's life, it's going to affect her choice of career, her choice of university, her choice of degree. And, you know, why aren't you doing anything to help us? And they wrote back and sort of said, well, actually, the guy said, my son hasn't done as well as expected either, but he has no excuse. And I'm afraid I can't communicate with people that, you know, talk like that. There's no common ground for me to have any communication with them like that.
Mm-hmm. Jane, it sounds as though you've got a huge challenge on your hands. In terms of, obviously, organisations that can actually cope with, as you've defined, wind turbine syndrome, we came across, obviously, the European organising body, which I think is EPOR,
yep.
Which is one line forward. For folk who might be sort of, you know, in a similar situation, or indeed be threatened with a wind farm suddenly being landed on them somewhere in the rural communities, what sort of strategies would you say they can actually adopt?
apart from prayer?
I think they need to fight the application. There's plenty of information on the internet about who they can, you know, who to contact and what to do, but fight the application, particularly where we know that turbines are going to be too close to human beings. I mean, we would support the 1.5 miles, 2 kilometres setback distance, and definitely support that. But if in some places, you know, turbines are proposed 400, 500, 600 metres from houses, schools, etc. And as we've said, you know, not enough is understood and known about the way that these sound waves actually affect humans. We know they affect animals, therefore it is highly likely that they affect humans. And the raft of things that have happened to us, which do seem to fit into this thing called wind turbine syndrome, suggests that there is much more research that needs to be done, and an epidemiological study across the United Kingdom to see what effects these things are having on human beings.
Well, Jane, you've already mentioned how you've had to move out of your home, you've had all the other challenges and difficulties that the things actually provided for your good self. Are you managing to sort of keep the rest of your body and soul together? Because obviously, presumably, your day-to-day activities have been completely banjaxed by this experience.
Well, mine have, yes. Mm. My husband is still farming the farm. Mm. And yes, I mean, I can spend 70 to 80 hours a week helping other people who wish to fight a wind farm application near them, and also compiling further evidence for our own case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it certainly isn't the life that I'd intended to have.
Certainly. And in terms of, say, looking to timescales, are we approaching a time where we can say, yes, well, by 2012, for instance, we'll at least be able to get some sort of campaign in order from this point of view? Or is it going to be closer than that?
I don't think it's about a campaign, because... a national campaign. I think there has to be continued pressure put on government to actually investigate and do better research, whether that's a campaign or just for them to wake up and realise that whatever we do, wind energy is not going to keep the lights on. Mm. It is not going to solve the energy crisis. It is too intermittent, it doesn't work, and the knock-on effects on humans and wildlife may be far, far greater than the production of energy.
Indeed. And I think, as we said earlier, something gone way beyond the notion of not in my backyard or NIMBY, which is frequently put together. Jane, you've articulated a very heartfelt and understandably coherent and cogent sort of case, just expressing your own concerns within the whole field. We've mentioned, obviously, the website. I mean, are there any contact details or, indeed, web addresses that you would advise folk to get in touch with?
Well, I suppose Country Guardian, which is www.countryguardian.com. I think net, but it might be org, but it's one of the two, has got an awful lot of detail on it.
Excellent. Well, Jane, it's been wonderful, as I say, sharing the pain, I can only say, at this particular stage. Hopefully we can at least give it a little bit more airtime in terms of the way that these things are rolled out. Thank you for your time, and hopefully we'll speak on slightly happier circumstances in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is Southside Broadcasting Online.